CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and...
That's $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 90.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the scene of a future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network. Well, good day!
Welcome, 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 one and all, to Head On with Bob Kincaid. Bob is still on the road, so you're stuck with me, John Fox, for the rest of the week, and we got tons to do. Boy, do we have tons to do, but we got to take care of business first. Email rolls into John, J-O-N, at headonradionetwork.com. The phone number for getting in on the program, it's on your nickel this week, 304-574-7811, 304-574-7811, and anybody catch any of the highlights from the Republican debate that went down last night? I really didn't get a chance to see much highlights, except for the one thing that I kept seeing, even on the news clips here in Australia. It was bloody Michelle Bachmann.
Barack Obama is a one-term president!
Now, from what I did catch, which was very little, it seemed as though the Republican candidates were all debating Barack Obama, and they weren't actually, like, debating each other. Which doesn't surprise me. But it seemed to be the big news that came out of the whole thing was Michelle Bachmann's declared. The Tea Party's goddess has declared. gonna make for an interesting primary season. And the big surprise to me is that Newt Gingrich even showed up. You know, I mean, talk about the guy showing up with nothing. It's like, hey, man, where's your staff? Staff? I think all the staff are in Texas with Perry. Excuse me. It's been raining like crazy here for days. And it's really damp. So, and when it does that, I get like really kind of chesty. And so I apologize for the unpleasant sounds that will occur from time to time. But they're unavoidable. Well, David in the chat room is saying, Gingrich needs to be told by the GOP, it's time for you to exit, sir. This is your last warning. Well, you know, I always knew Gingrich was, you know, just kind of a hateful conservative. But I really didn't have any idea until, a week ago how similar Newt Gingrich and Alex Jones are. Which I know, huh? But they're both just release self-serving media. Now, you know, I'm totally into advocacy journalism. I mean, that's all cool. But it's the constant selling thing. You know, Newt Gingrich, on the anniversary of Pearl Harbor just last year, you know, used the opportunity to tweet to remind people, like, going, oh, it's the anniversary of the bombing of Pearl Harbor. We thought this was a good day to remind you to buy our book about Pearl Harbor. Yeah, I'm into self-promotion and all. But, you know, on a day when, you know, those that are still even, walking, might be thinking of people that they lost, and this fine conservative pops up going, Happy Pearl Harbor Day, buy my book. I mean, how different from, you know, how is that different from Alex Jones, you know? And I mentioned on the show yesterday, you know, he and his wife, Calicita, have produced, you know, this film, City on the Hill. And the wife has the children's book coming out soon about American exceptionalism. That shit's just really scary. What? All right. David from Maine, because I mentioned Alex Jones, which is a favorite subject of Dave's and mine. Alex Jones is advertising, he's selling denim jeans in between warnings of the police state. Nice. Nice. Is he like modeling the jeans, David? You can tell me later. I know we'll talk on the phone later. Excuse me. But where to begin today? And, well, I think I have the thing. You may have seen this at the Raw Story. Walmart. You know, one of our favorites, Walmart. Someone got a hold of an internal training video. And this is something else. Now, this is exactly what you'd expect. However, hearing the propaganda really kind of, here we go. I'm sorry. My babbling as I was just looking for the tab. Oh, and thank you, Flash, you're locking up on me. We'll get there. Anyway, there's an internal training video where they warn about the dangers of a union. Now, they're going at this from the angle of like how they've just entered into the grocery business over the last year and how they're a threat to old-fashioned grocery stores. And, you know, you have the two actors as Walmart employees are probably high-level managers, I bet. You know, dressed as normal Walmart employees, looking like they're ready for a toothpaste ad. And let's see if we can get this to play. Now, I had this all queued up. Bear with me just a minute. I'm going to have to reload this page. The fun of doing radio self-engineered. Just one second. I've got to go back and find it again. Anyway, as I'm distracted trying to multitask at 8 o'clock in the morning, understand here, as y'all are in, like, drive time or in the middle of the afternoon or late in the afternoon, it's just 8 a.m. here, so pardon me for being a bit slow. Okay, let's try this again. Do I have too many things open? Probably. Get rid of some of this. Bear with me a second, because this you got to hear just the wording of this stuff. It's incredible. The 13-minute video is entitled "Think Hard Before You Sell." Doug and Maria, yeah, two actors posing as Target employees, we're a Target because we're a threat to unions. Which, not so much your Target, but you are a threat to unions. Target's been about getting as much for as little, you know, since their inception. So, technology is just not wanting to play ball today. Come on, stupid thing. Come on, come on. Ah, well-laid plans, folks. Ah, this is tragic. You pain in the ass. Well, let's see if I can find the dialogue I want. In the transcript, I pre-rolled this before the show. And now it just wants to be a pain in the butt. Oh, well. You know what? We'll come back to that. Let's go back to Newt Gingrich. If that tab will shift. Come on! This little story is taking place down in West Virginia. At the Raw Story, like I said, you know, Gingrich publishes a lot of DVDs and books. And, you know, he's got charity himself to be completely out of touch after the whole Tiffany's account scandal thing and then going off on a Grecian holiday. And would it surprise you if money from a charity ended up in his business ventures somehow? Would that surprise you? Wouldn't surprise me. Hey, guess what? A May 2011 audit commissioned by the West Virginia Secretary of State found a tax-exempt charity found several of his for-profit businesses. Expert told ABC News the Gingrich's Renewing America American Leadership Charity may have crossed the line by participating in the political process and helping to funnel cash to its profit-making enterprises. Hey, a crooked Republican. The charity is said to have purchased cases of books and DVDs from Gingrich Productions and paid an additional $220,000 to Gingrich Communications. Gingrich was featured in Renewing American Leadership fundraising letters, and their website serves as a vehicle for his policy ideas. According to Google, the website recently scrubbed pages that promoted Gingrich's appearances at the Conservative Political Action Conference and his support for the Republican budget plan authored by Mr. Ryan. The spirit of of operating a nonprofit organization is to work for the public good regardless of the politics that are involved. American for Philanthropy President Daniel Borichoff explained, I believe it violates that spirit. I reckon so, too. I reckon so, too. And this guy showed up at the debate last night. You got to give that. I'll give you that much, Newt. You got a bloody steel set to actually have the balls to go and walk in there and stand next to other candidates that actually have, well, a machine and a staff. And you had to know that this was coming. This can't. And, you know, he's got history, too. In 1997, the House Ethics Committee voted to reprimand and fine Gingrich $300,000 after he was accused of using tax-exempt organization to finance political activities. I mean, the guy's, he's got form. He's got form. He's got form. They do this stuff, and they're wanting to try and shut down what's left of the unions. I mean, this is all about the money in politics, isn't it? It's incredible. It's incredible. All right. Tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to find us a tune here real quick because I really want you to see this video while I reboot browsers and things. So, let's see. Oh, we're... yeah, we'll do that. Stand by, folks. I'm going to sort out this audio and we'll be right back. Let's crack the sky.
As the troops keep progressing, you'll know that you're falling behind and you're falling in fear. They're just too caught up in the way they've been brought up to hear. You hope for your minute in strange voice.
Looks like I got it sorted out here. Okay, so, you know, this is you know, one of those videos that every new American Walmart employee sees coming in, and it starts off with, you know, think before you sign. So they go through this whole, the whole kind of bullshit, how they're a fucking great company and how, you know, you don't need a union to communicate with us. Your manager's door is always open for suggestions. Blah, 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 blah. But then they get into why they're in grocery and just absolutely shit all over the unions. It's just, it's a shocker. And some of the things that they mention in here, union guidelines, you know, in their what ifs, I sit there and think, when was the last time anyone ran into job demarcations like this? Anyway, this is from the Walmart internal training video, somehow snagged by Gawker.
The items, but now, well, many of our stores have a full line grocery. and others sell many more food items, which means that we're now competing not only with other retailers, but with grocery stores, too.
That's a huge challenge, but we believe we can win the battle with the competition because not only do we have high-quality products at competitive prices, we've got the best guest service in the business, and the best that makes those of us at Target a target.
You're not a customer, you're a guest. The doublespeak, you know, is all over the place. That's just the start.
Target ourselves.
We're a target because we're a threat to unions, the unions that represent grocery store workers.
When we take business away from unionized grocery stores, then fewer employees.
And fewer grocery store employees mean fewer union.
So right there, they're saying, as we destroy jobs, as we remove jobs, as our business gets bigger and takes over your local supermarket.
Members and fewer members, well, that's a problem for the union business. That's right. I said business.
Yeah. I love this. Let's define the whole thing with union dues as being a business, that it's a for-profit model. I love this. It's just absolutely creepy. I'm going to bring it back just a hair.
When we take business away from unionized grocery stores, that means they need fewer employees.
And fewer grocery store employee union members. And fewer members? Well, that's a problem for the union business. That's right. I said business. Union business.
A union is not a charity. It's not a club. And it's not part of the government. It's a business. A business that has to take in money to survive. But it doesn't have any products to sell. All it has is memberships to sell. A union's only source of income is the money they charge members.
Money for initiation, dues, and fines, and assessments. You get the picture. So it's pretty obvious that the fewer members their business has, the less money they collect.
The union's only alternative is to get more people to pay their hard-earned money to them in dues every month.
And that's becoming more and more of a problem for unions every day. 50 years ago, one out of every three workers was in a union. Today, that number, excluding government workers, is...
Okay, notice the little caveat that he throws in there. He says, 1950, 33% of the workforce was unionized. That was all workers. Then they go, today, it's 8%, if you don't count public employees.
It's dropped to less than 1 in 10.
One of the biggest reasons is that workers know that all the good things unions once did, child safety law, workman's comp, all of that, they're all laws today.
They were all laws today. They're all laws today that while we get you to not support your own rights, the politicians that we at Walmart will support are trying to, at this moment, undo those very child labor laws. That are on the books now. So here they go. The unions are no longer necessary. They were once necessary, but business is all good now, you see.
Laws protecting workers. They worked out.
And nobody wants to pay dues for something they already have.
See, you don't need someone fighting for you. You already won. That's why you're at 50 years of age. For a crap job at Walmart. Let's go to the phones. How you going? Welcome to the program. Who we got?
Oh, hey, it's Sandra.
Hey, Sandra, how are you?
Oh, no, I'm all right. A bit disturbed by that, you know, little propaganda you're playing.
Oh, well, it goes right down the rabbit hole. Like, they're just showing the shout talking about the unions not being a charity, you know, like it's slush fund.
Unfortunately, though, it's, you know, I mean, that's the line that people buy hook, line, and sinker here. They don't see it as a countervailing force, and if they go away, it's just straight to the bottom. I mean, the unions aren't there just to collect money from folks. I mean, incredible, but I swear that's the sort of Ayn Randian position that they want to put on everybody, except for everybody out there is going to suffer, no matter if you're a union or not.
Well, and you know, that line of like, I remember this, you know, 20 years ago, you get this same thing, you know. Why are you going to, you know, part with some of your hard-earned money? And it's like, well, it's because you're paying me a crap wage, and I'd like to give something to an organization that might actually fight for me to get better conditions, you know?
Well, yeah, no, I mean, it's just incredible. And it's, I think they're sort of pulling out the final stops in this country to just sort of wipe out the union movement. But see, people don't realize what comes after serfdom, because there's nothing to stop employers and politicians who are backed by endless corporate money from slowly and surely eliminating one protection after another. I mean, they're already effing with child labor laws in a couple of states here.
That's what made me cringe the first time that I watched this video. When they talk about, you know, well, there's been laws passed now for all that stuff that unions used to be good for. And this is what I was talking about yesterday a bit. You know, who needs conspiracies when they're ripping us off right in front of our faces? And, you know, it's not as though that there's a move here, you know, once the unions are gone, then we'll start working on undoing all the child labor laws.
No. I mean, there is, you know, there really is no coming back. I mean, especially in this country, when you have such a lack of awareness of history, and just about any mechanism to fight is totally annihilated in this country. I don't think they have no idea how to respond. So as it's being stripped away, I mean, for example, there's a chart that just came out, I forget what department it's from, showing literally the complete collapse of the share of incomes that workers have in this country.
Oh, yeah.
And so what's happening with that is when the wages are just falling like they are for workers, even during the Gilded Age, you had the Wild Wild West and expansion and other places to sort of go to try to secure some sort of life that wasn't just servitude. But those opportunities are gone now. So, listen, I really wonder what's going to happen, because I used to talk to Bob about India and how India has this huge middle class of like 300 million, but the country is nearly a billion. So you have this huge Guatemalan type of model where a third of the people are well off and two-thirds aren't. Well, in this country, the top 20% of the population are doing just well, just fine, thank you very much. That's about 60 million, and the rest, the hell yeah, with us. You see what I'm saying? So there's a real quick jump to the Guatemalan model for this country. It's already getting made. It's all set to go. And people are stupid. They don't realize that once they don't need the 120 million of us, the police state's kicking in, and it's kicking in now. So if you're out there and aware of these things, you know, you bucking up your passport and trying to get the fuck out of there. Sorry. I'm not feeling very hopeful, just in lieu of some of the economic shit that's going on here. And Obama is a disaster warmonger. I understand, you know, that maybe he tried and he's stymied by the party, but his actual policies, they're into this third way shit, which is they also want to get rid of the New Deal, but in a different way, quieter and a little bit nicer. But it's all the same plan at the end of the day.
How do you do that nicer?
Well, that's what I'm saying. The way you do it nicer, you put this nice black face up there, and then next thing you know, you ain't got Social Security, you ain't got Medicare, you ain't got nothing but a bloated military and a bunch of poor people. Well, and the black face running for election.
Well, you know, as I was trying to prepare my brain to fill in for Bob this week, you know, I just kept finding myself constantly getting stuck in the same kind of mental cul-de-sac of what else can you say, but it's just so like fucked up beyond recognition.
It is really disturbing. I mean, I don't, you know, I'm sort of just inept this administration is, either by design or they know people aren't paying attention or they don't care or something. Because, for example, they should have been have appointed Elizabeth Warren to this consumer advocacy group that she's fixing up.
Yeah, why is this taking,
taking so long? Because she ain't representing the banks. The banks are terrified of this woman. And she's so clever, she has sort of stymied every move that this inept administration has made to get rid of her. She's still there. They're like, oh, my God, this bitch is still here.
She's awesome. So, I love her to death. She, like, was ever a person that that was creating a job that we needed and was the right person for the job, she wins on all counts, and that's exactly why they're fighting her. But,
well, it's a problem for the administration because he needs to get $1 billion to run his reelection. And where does he get that from? Not from all the fooled Negroes out there who's going to vote for him anyway. No, he needs to go to the banksters. They don't want this consumer thing. They want this gone. If it's not gone, they want somebody who they can control, preferably from their industry, running it like they do every woman, though. It's kind of not going with the plan. And Obama can't afford to further alienate the professional left permanently by, you know, running her ass off. But we'll see. This is something to keep your eye out on for the people who politics. For the rest of us who are just trying to eat, hey, don't know what action, perhaps.
You bringing up the Warren thing, you know, this is just a great microcosm of what this administration's been like. A whole lot of really, really great talk. And then the implementation never actually happens. And then if it ever actually does happen, like with the health care debate, it ends up being, you know, many, many, many shades lighter than it should have been.
Yeah, and this, I'm really concerned about this sort of uptick of this police state. I mean, you know, Obama is just, he's a Bush on steroids in that regard. You know, there is no stopgap. There's no daylight between the two administrations, and this guy is relentless on sort of taking our rights to privacy away. I mean, I don't know what else to say about it. I'm looking at all this different stuff going down, the FBI re-empowered like Hoover and shit, and it's just like, hello?
Yeah, I haven't been able to get caught up on it, but there's been some changes to the Patriot Act that even some legislators are just like, whoa, this is getting creepy. But I haven't had time to catch up on it. That as opposed to pulling it back, they're just.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's being accelerated. It's like, okay, he took out Bin Laden or whatever the hell they did. Who knows? They're telling us that. So you would think, okay, great, now we can get out of Afghanistan. But no, it's being used to ratchet it up. We're being told, well, no, because of retaliation, this, that, or another. So, you know, the war in Eurasia has been going on for I don't know how long, and they need, you know, it's just, it is really very creepy out there with the sort of endless war. And I have relatives who ain't ever seen nothing but war.
That's
what's scaring me.
Yeah, there is now a generation that's not that much younger than me, you know. That,
yeah, it's great. I mean, it's just like, hello?
That have known nothing but us being in constant conflict. And actually, you know, I'm past 40, and if I really think about it, I can't really think of much time where we weren't actively involved somewhere.
And now this man is in Libya. I don't know what the reason is for that. They try to say the UN declaration, but of charter, but they've destroyed that charter because the second bit of that charter says that even if a country is having a civil war, you're not supposed to interfere with it. You see what I'm saying? So the international law is being annihilated, and Obama is bombing different countries, five places at the moment. This is looking more like a world war. I don't know. I'm a bit worried.
And why isn't five active fronts part of this huge, supposedly crucial budget debate that we're having?
Well, it's really crazy. I mean, the problem is, and if you hear certain elites slip up, because you know, they're saying that, well, we're going to have to figure out how we can convince a screwed over population that they need to release more of the safety net. Okay, we already screwed them over with the banksters, but, oh, we got to keep funding these wars, and now we got to convince them that they don't need Medicare or Social Security. This is what the game plan is. And so I think right now they're trying to figure out how to do it, and they may do this fake debt shit, debt ceiling. Maybe they'll let that lapse for a few days to throw the shit into chaos, and then they'll be able to come back to us and say, oh, my God, you know, we need to eliminate the rest of the New Deal. I know I sound crazy.
No, I'm looking at this shit. Not at all.
I'm looking at this, and I'm thinking, what is the debt ceiling is some sort of, it's all fake. We have the global currency. Hello, we lost $6 billion, $12 billion the other day in Iraq, and you're telling me now we got to be concerned about what?
This is one of my big problems with context of any of this. We're sitting there arguing over the crumbs, which is things like, in the grand scheme of things, things like unemployment and Medicare, while, you know, the main course is, you know, that's costing all the money is, you know, the money being stolen in Iraq, you know, whatever big dollar thing.
And
like you said, they'll probably use something like the debt ceiling to scare people into giving up more of whatever safety net is left. I just want to make this the one thing that I think the United States has an unrealistic expectation in the modern era for what unemployment numbers should be. Now, first of all, we know that the numbers get fudged constantly because, you know, once you're unemployed for a certain amount of time, you just kind of like fall off the records. You kind of no longer exist. That if we were honest, what unemployment there is, what, about 9-something% at the moment, Sandra?
Yeah, that's a joke. It's a U3 figure, which excludes huge swaths. So most people agree with the U6, which is about 16% for white people and double for the brown, basically.
Right.
See, you have 30% for people of color and about 16 for, we're still talking about the 80% of the population, not the top 20. I don't talk about them because that's a whole different strata.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, U.S., they don't like to talk about class. We're classless, which is bullshit. But, yeah, for the 80% of us, it's like Depression-era numbers, I think.
But you know, here in Australia and in Europe, the unemployment numbers, we're at about 5% unemployment at the moment here in Australia.
What, in Australia?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, but you guys have a boom
right now, though, right? But it depends. If you're in mining, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, and extractive energy.
If you're not, it's a different deal. But we consider that full employment, really.
Yeah, that's what 5% is considered, you know, full employment, according to the central banks. So, I mean, that tells you and all you need to know.
So if we're entering an era where, because of, you know, all the different factors, you know, automation, all these other things, that maybe we can't, we'll never actually be able to get, you know, everyone into work, that would almost mean that the safety net needs to be thought of as being, one, more important and also larger, because if you're in such a boom where you're at full employment, how do you expect to employ any more people if you've hit your maximum?
Well, no, but the thing is that, you know, you cannot have a sort of, quote, first world functioning society with no middle class. That was a sort of dream of this experiment, this project-based country. And I consider Australia one of those project-based countries, too. And so, you know, you have to have a wide middle of people who can create demand, spend, in order to have, I think, a functioning democracy these days. Because if you have, like, this sort of extreme concentration of wealth, which is going on here, without any opportunities at all, you're going to have total social unrest in the U.S. Because Americans can't handle it. Trust and believe that. They're going to be stupid up in here in a minute.
Well, I mean,
because they smoke and mirrors. Everyone has a flat screen. They all dumb as hell here. But as soon as you see what I'm saying, people believe that 30,000 a year is middle class in this country. You see where I'm going with this?
Yeah. Now I'm going to ask. I'm going to ask what might not be I don't know exactly how to word this, and I could catch some flack for it. Now, you talk about the smoke and mirrors, and you're saying, you know, people, you know, actually getting up. Do you think, because you made the comment before that there's going to be people in the black population that are just going to vote for Obama anyway. Will there also be a bunch of people that are going to be like, wait a minute, this is the same crap that I've heard from all these white guys all these years. He's not different.
Yeah, but see, you cannot underestimate the value of symbols for oppressed people. I don't know how else to explain it. Okay. The idea that the U.S. presidency is controlled by a black person, oh, shit. It's really hard to break down that symbol. So the fact that the black population is getting zero help from this administration is making some cracks, but I think he'll get a lot of support.
What? Because the only other alternative is going to be someone who's bending over however they can to satisfy racist Tea Party alternative.
Well, or just, you know, I don't know. I just, you know, for a lot of people who are going to actually vote, which is also the issue, because I think the Republicans are doing a swell job of passing ID laws and any other sort of law to keep people from voting. So I think Obama could be in trouble because of the unemployment. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, people will vote their pocketbook. So that's why they're scrambling now. If you notice, the administration is really freaking out because they're extend and pretend by giving trillions to the bankers. It's like, it's not working. You know, so they're struggling because they realize now that, damn, you know, they may have this high unemployment this time next year, and that's not good.
You know, I thought it was supposed to get better, even though I was under no misconceptions that Barack Obama was a leftist in any way. I always knew he was a centrist. And I don't know if you were part of the Horn family a few years ago when Bob was actually down in West Virginia for one of the one of these dinner speeches, and Barack Obama was the speaker, and this is before he became a national figure. We sat there and went, this has got to be the most lame, boring-ass guy we've heard in a long time.
Well, there's a community of black activists who called him for what he was in 2004. So, and they've been proven right time and time again about this guy. So, I think most people had other hopes for Obama. You know, I certainly did, and it's not panning out. But what's really disturbing is he seems to be presiding over the decline.
Yeah.
And that's what's really scary. It's like, dude, like my mother said, she said, damn, this MF-er is president now and this shit's falling apart. Figures. Had to be a black person. Now, that's her, and I'm laughing. but I understand what she's talking about.
Oh, yeah. There's another factor in this election that's coming up. The Republicans in 2012 kind of remind me of the Republicans back in 96, where the field was really loose, no one was really satisfied. Do the Republicans really want it this time?
Well, you know, but this is the political scene here is so volatile because there's such a high level of misery and there is no real mechanism for change. The Citizen United kind of put the kibosh on your normal expression of politics in this country, being that my vote is not the same as what Citizens United can provide. So the speech is money means more access and power straight off the base. There is no comparison. One man, one vote, that means you ain't got no power. And so it's a huge problem in this country how people can express it. I mean, I don't think voting is the way to get any change now.
Well, I think the system's been so hijacked in so many different directions. I think it's a complete and utter joke. The first thing that it's something that I didn't understand or appreciate till I started living in Australia, where we have mandatory voting. Now, you'll hear a lot of Americans go, that goes against my liberty. If I don't want to vote, I don't have to vote. Well, I mean, you can go to the ballot box and cast a no vote.
Well, no, but mandatory voting would be a help when you look at Citizens United, though.
Well, even before Citizens United, if everyone has to vote, like everybody has to at least check in, that removes voter disenfranchisement efforts.
Yeah, but see, you're in America. You're talking about America. America has governed with huge amounts of people not being able to vote.
That's part of the plan. That's what I mean. That's why the biggest thing that could fix problems over there, even outside of Citizens United, is if voting were actually mandatory. Because then everyone has to show up. And so the bunch of people who were told that if you have a parking ticket, don't go, that you can't tell them that because it's their actual civic duty to go.
No. This country has spent people have shed so much blood to get one segment more to vote. It's a joke in this country. And you know, they're trying their damnedest to roll back as much. For example, people who are felons, In I don't know how many states, lose their right to vote forever.
That doesn't make any sense. I thought if you paid your price to society, which was your conviction.
Well, it makes sense if you look at it from the sort of rancid racial history of this country, because most of those disenfranchisement laws are in the South.
Yeah, and they're going to be
and most of the people who are in that predicament are of color.
Right.
So it's like, you know, it's another way of keeping brown people from voting. I mean, I'm not saying that everything is about race in this country, but it really is a huge factor with, like, health care. The reason why we never got single payer in this country has a lot to do with white people not wanting brown people to get access as much as it does the corporate powers that be.
I wouldn't even try to argue with that, Sanders.
Well, I don't mean now, but I mean initially when it was first coming up with Truman, because Truman tried to do it, and the big argument was, oh, my God, you know, we don't want the niggrits. Yeah. And that was part of the argument. So that comes up a lot in the U.S. They really shoot themselves in the foot because when government expands, it tends to bring non-whites into the mix,
right.
And when that happens, that's when you hear the most outrage.
Yeah, non-whites and the youth vote, because that's
right. So
that's one of the other things that's being attacked on a state by state level is like same day registration for students and whatnot, saying, "Oh, you need a waiting period to vote."
Yeah, or you have to go back to your original address to vote. I mean, in Wisconsin, I don't know if you heard today, but the Supreme Court said that union law can take effect. So now Walker's union law where all the people were protesting is for naught because it's going to take effect right now. So I don't know what the response to it's going to be, but
well, you know they got the
basically won.
Well, you know that they've got a lot of these recall elections coming up.
Oh no, there's a recall. I'm not too sure what I don't know what their plan is. I'm sure they have a contingency plan for this eventuality, but it's just kind of just so awful what's going on. It's like I don't want people teaching my kids who aren't paid well enough. You see what I mean? It's so cannibalizing. I don't really understand the mentality. It's like, well, don't you people want your kids to be educated?
Well, and, you got guys like, Chris Christie in New Jersey who's actually wanting to privatize school system.
Yeah, but did you know that he worked for the company that he is
going
to turn the school? That's the thing that kills me. It's like,
of course he did.
Where's the outrage? It's like Edison, I guess, is a company that will get almost $1 billion. But the Supreme Court there said that he couldn't do it. So the last I heard was that they put a injunction on that. It broke the Constitution in New Jersey. So,
well, Jeb Bush tried to do the same thing in Florida too. He was
they wish they had Jeb Bush right there now though.
Oh yeah. Mr. Scott? He's not a popular man at the moment. I did have something up for.
Well, he's a criminal. You see.
Oh, is he the guy? Is he the Medicare fraud guy?
Yeah, he's the one that's doing the forcing welfare recipients to give up their blood to test for drugs. And oh, his wife owns all the testing places.
Oh, imagine that!
And it's just like, hello.
Bloody hell! Okay.
Yeah, no, Anyway, I'm sorry. I don't mean to go on, but it's just sort of like these people with their Ayn Randian philosophy, where somehow it's okay for Republicans to refer to the bulk of the population as parasites. Where do they get the people to vote for them? I am so confused. I'm confused. I'm like, wait a minute. I'm a parasite. Oh, I'm gonna vote for Republicans, right?
You get a fair bit of that in the country. He's like, oh, these guys beat me over the head again. Let's vote for him one more time. But it's crazy, and I don't know if you're ever going to turn this thing around. When I watch stuff like this Walmart video and see the moves that are, you can see like the entire system being dismantled.
The thing is, what's going to be left? Because it's really scary. Like I said, you have 300 million people in the U.S. all thinking they're entitled to something, all going to be told, well, no, you actually have nothing, and deal with it. And I just don't really, it's a bit infantile, this society. You know how infants act when they don't get shit.
They scream.
So I don't, I just think that when I say unrest here, don't get confused. I'm not talking about anything positive.
Right. Okay.
I'm thinking Thunderdome, Mel, Gibson, hell.
It's a rosy picture you paint, Sandra.
Whatever. I don't mean to be. I'm sorry to be so, but I'm just. I guess I'm kind of just really stunned by this debt ceiling and the sort of Russian roulette they're playing with, what's left of the economy, and it's just kind of like, wow. So I'm really jaded.
Yeah, I don't blame you, Sandra, and that's why we have this little venting process that we have.
Exactly, this is why I am so glad to hear that you're on, and I really like the different tracks you're playing. So
right on. That playing before Crack the Sky, they're a Midwest prog band from the 70s that never seemed to get beyond a certain audience, and they're still around, they're still gigging, they're still doing records, so check them out, Crack the Sky. They're hilariously comical prog rockers. That's all I can
say. Let me ask you a quick question. You mentioned something, I don't know if it was today or yesterday, but you were talking about Christchurch. They had another earthquake, right?
had 12 overnight two nights ago.
Were you suggesting that these places are going to become uninhabitable? That was the gist of what you're saying, right?
Well, in the last 6 months, just...
I mean, because it's scary down there.
Yeah. And you could... And it was after this sudden, you know, brash of these quakes over the last couple of days, as the local news folks are going around and talking to people, there were some people, and one woman just seemed to sum it up, what I think probably nailed it, what it's like to be there. She's just like,
man,
we're tired. We're exhausted. Because, like, this has been so consistent over the last few months that they're like, you know, there are people that are considering moving out of Christchurch because they're saying, you know, the kids are scared. Their kids are scared.
Yeah, well, no. When I first heard that, I spent some time in Christchurch. It's a lovely city. And, you know, I was just kind of like horrified when I saw the church, you know, having been there myself. And, I didn't know that this had happened yesterday. And I just thought, wow, you know, what's going on?
Yeah. And I really have this question, and this is not based on anything except I just have the question. With all this fracking that's going on, like what happened in Japan and like what's been going on in Christchurch, where they've been reporting that these quakes seem to be closer to the surface than we're used to. And if this constant fracturing of the upper crust that we're doing in places, is this ending up not causing quakes, but making them that much more damaging if the upper crust is that much less stable from what we're doing to it?
Well, you heard about the earthquake in Arkansas. I mean, they've actually blamed that one on fracking. So, to be honest, I don't think you're...
Okay.
I don't know. We're all lay people here, so I appreciate what you're saying. But I remember reading that article and thinking, oh, my God, this is too weird. So it's not unimaginable what you're talking about. I mean, who knows? I think the seismic activity is that ring of fire. I'm bracing myself because I live in California.
Right. Well, you know, and right now, all our Melbourne airport has hardly been able to get a flight up for the last 2 days because of an ash
what,
cloud.
Volcanoes?
From the Chilean one. The clouds come over Australia, and only one out of four airlines is running anything domestically out of Melbourne.
Well, Australia, I mean, is Australia at risk of, like, becoming the first country to be destroyed by global warming? And I'm sorry to laugh.
No. All the modeling, Sandra, and this is a point that I used to make on my old show all the time, all the modeling showed that Australia would feel global warming first and worst.
Because that flood, I watched it because of the Internet. So I watched that on the Australian national TV, then floods up in Queensland. I was like, damn, are you kidding me? What the hell? And then fires in the West. The only reason I'm talking, because I've been to Australia, so it's not like it's that foreign to me. And I'm just thinking, good Jesus, you know.
Well, I don't know how much of the show you caught last night, but I played the audio from of this op-ed piece. And if you go to Common Dreams and see a connection between climate change and the Joplin tornadoes, never. And it does this, and it's someone just put video images of everything that's going on in the planet against this guy McKinnon's op-ed piece, where he basically talks.
McKibben?
Yeah, McKibben, who's great.
Okay.
And you know, basically about the, like, don't try and make connections. Always treat them as isolated events, which is, you know, the public meme that's always out there. But it's kind of showing, though, like, yeah, I might not be able to say that storm is because of climate change, but the modeling has always said that as we start to see the effects, these extreme weather conditions are going to become more extreme and more frequent and more erratic. So I can't point to the one storm, but I can point to the trend of what's going on in Texas, the wildfires there.
Arizona, that's burning up the whole state.
The whole Central Plains flooding out. Queensland, twice in the past year, 100-year floods. India.
Yeah, right. Yes. And that in Pakistan, those floods there were just,
Record snows for the Midwest in the United States this year. equaled record flooding. Now, in the plains, you got a couple of different things going on there. There, it's not just the changes in the climate and the increased rain and everything else, but for decades, all through Iowa and whatnot, they've been re-engineering the natural tributary system into all these man-made geometric, you know, irrigation tracts. And it's completely removed all of the old surface runoff that used to deal with the Mississippi. And since the 70s, they were saying, you know, we got to watch how we're doing this. They're not planning this very well. We're going to come to a time where the water's going to have no place to go, and the whole basin's just going to flood. What's been happening? The whole basin floods.
But you know, in Joplin, that, you know, God protected those, and he didn't protect some of the others. I mean, that's the sort of logic you got from those poor people down there after the tornadoes. You know, it's like if they were spared, you know, the cloud beam did it. They don't want to make any connections with any larger possibilities. Because if you believe in climate change, that means you're a socialist.
That was another thing that we were talking about yesterday, you know. The fact that climate change in the environment somewhere along the last 20 years became a partisan issue when it used to not be.
Yeah, but is that just in the U.S. or is that now spreading outside of the U.S.?
I always thought
the U.S. was the only place where it was a debatable issue. It's elsewhere now?
Well, here in Australia, the opinion polls have shifted huge because... Unlike you've had the Citizens United thing there, we've had stuff here like where the richest woman in Australia who owns a huge mining operation has bought one of the television networks. And so she's gone in it with Packer's son, and so basically she's setting up an entire lineup of programs that is nothing but climate change denial.
Okay, in the face of it happening right before your eyes, huh? How interesting.
But see, one of the things I found about living in Australia, since it's smaller, the fallacy of the showmanship of it, you can see through it easier, I think, or more Australians see through it and they don't really buy into it. But we've had a lot of the same paid people that go around, you know, debunking good science, being paid to come here. In the last 6 months, we've had every climate change denier idiot shipped through and on every talk radio station in Australia.
Australia, the thing that I find interesting is all the freaks who are sort of driving your housing bubble. I mean, that's bound to pop. And there's going to be a lot of suffering.
Oh yeah, but see, the reality for most of Australians, I think they understand it. You know, it's like they now, the Queenslanders have been flooded out more than they've ever seen, just after having been in the most record drought that they had ever seen.
They're believing it now, huh?
Oh, we've always believed it, but there has been a shift. And I think that was purely money paying for a louder, you know, blowhorn. And
you can't get much louder than two once-a-century type floods in 6 months, though, can you?
Yeah. Well, but see, it's all gotten weird now because we're actually debating putting a carbon tax in. So all the mining magnates all have their panties in a twist and are running around going, "The sky is falling, the sky is falling." And the right wing, which is like Johnny Howard's old party, is all, you know, going, "Oh, it's a job killer. 10,000 mining jobs will disappear like that." And, you know, and they're going to somehow mine the coal from overseas and, you know, all the same bullshit routines. And I don't think people are buying it. And the fracking thing has suddenly popped up. And I just think that in general, Australians have a little bit more connection to their environment than Americans do, because for so long the environment here, even before it got crazy, could kill you.
Yeah, no, listen, that was my thing. When I was in Australia, I was always like, damn, the bugs and just the whole sort of ginormity of Australia, everything was just over the top, okay, when I was there. I'm like, good Lord, I'm swimming, and oh, no, don't go out there, you know. And spiders as big as my hand, you know. I just was like, oh, my God. Yeah, so I know, because I always was sort of just awestruck by the landscape and just, you know, what you have to watch out for, basically.
You got to watch out for the bugs, the snakes, and the drunk English tourists.
Well, you know, yeah. No, I mean, I spent some time up north there, too, and, you know, that was like sort of, I was like, damn, where am I? Mississippi? Shit.
Pardon me. Well, you know, I mean, and like right now we're getting just doused with rain like the past 5 days, and just north of us, like every river system's getting ready to just flood. And
do you live in Melbourne?
No, I live in a place called Woi Woi, which is about an hour north of Sydney.
In
an area that they call the Central Coast, and it's halfway between Sydney and Newcastle. It's a groovy place. I mean, the beach is only like 7 minutes bike ride down the road. But then 80% of the Australian population lives within an hour of the ocean.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
It's that kind of country. But, hey, Sandra, really good to talk to you. I'm going to take a break.
Oh, yeah, I got to go, too.
Open it up, but always good to talk to you, and you take care of yourself.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. And the amazing Sandra, I love talking to her. She's so much fun. All right, we're going to take a little break here, top of the hour. We'll do a little late. Let's just find something fun. Oh, we'll play some. Let's play something from down here. Like some Crowded House. I like that one. And so we'll play that one. Here we go. Four Seasons in One Day, Crowded House. You're listening to Head On with Bob Kincaid. I am John Fox, your fill-in host.
Four Seasons in One Day.
If you want to get in on the program, dial in 304-574-7811, 304-574-7811, and email rolls into JON at headonradionetwork.com. We'll be back after this.
Even when you're feeling warm, the temperature could drop away, like four seasons in one day. Smiling as the shit comes down, you can tell a man from what he has to say. Everything gets turned around, and I will risk my neck again, again. You can take me where you will, up the creek and through the mill. Like all the things you can't explain, four seasons in one day. Blood. Sleeping on an unmade bed, finding out wherever there is comfort, there is pain. Only one step away, like four seasons in one day. Blood.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's .org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to Head-On with Bob Kincaid. I am John Fox, filling in for Bob Kincaid this week while he's on the road. Hoping to hear from Bob sometime during the week. And I got a little information in the chat room. I got David on hold at the moment. Just hanging tight there, buddy. When talking about the fracking thing and impacts on earthquakes, Psychoticus Rex 2 in the chat room, who says he's a mining engineer, he mentions here, he goes, fracking leads to smaller, more frequent quakes as stresses in the crust disperse more easily. Also, some minor uplift due to crust compression tends to thwart normally expected subsidence from mining things out of the crust. So land level neutrality mostly. They did this originally around the San Andreas in California, pumping in water to see if they could prevent big quakes. It did, at the expense of hundreds of tiny quakes. Much litigation later, the lawyers were of the opinion that the damage was induced by intention. All small quakes, says here, rising ocean levels and warmer water might be leading to more global tectonic activity, but at this level, any change wouldn't rise above background noise. Give it a decade or so and some real rise, like feet, and you'll probably say something differently. Interesting. I'm going to have to look up this thing in Arkansas that Sandra was talking about, where they actually blamed the quake on fracking, but we'll get there. But we'll go to the phones. David, you there, mate?
I am there.
How you going, buddy? It's been a while.
Yeah, it has been a while. It's been a lot of distractions and some work.
Yeah, some work, and we got a lot of work. We actually have a lot of work to do in the next 6 months.
Yeah, we do. We do. You know, we put the focus on voting so much in this country. And I don't know if you caught what I was talking about with Bob. I was serious. John, I was serious as a heart attack when I said we need a universal progressive discipline camp.
Okay.
I'm serious.
Details, please. Details.
All right. Well, here's what you would do. You would hire the best of the best from around the world. You would hire someone from the Foreign Legion. You would hire someone from West Point. You would hire someone from Greece. You would hire someone from Africa. You'd hire someone. You hire all these people all around the world, and the whole idea is this. You get people to understand, in order for the things you envision to happen, there's going to have to be some serious labor. And unfortunately, people, this is the problem. Nobody wants to tell you that it's a hard discipline. And the reason why I came across this idea was the fact that I was watching this documentary by Louis Theroux called Miami Mega Jail. And it was an eye-opener, John. It was an eye-opener. Because what they do is if you do a crime in Miami, they give you a chance to get back in the system. But it's not easy. When you get into their camp, they take military professionals, they bring you in there, and every single rule, it applies to you. Every single rule of discipline. And the thing you learn there is that there was, as Louis talked to him in the background, he said, you really can't give in to the fact that if they see one little inkling that you're just acting, you can't reach them. He's like, exactly. And that's the point. That's where we're at. We need that type of toughness. We need that type of discipline. And that's where the whole military comes in. And you would have, see, John, you would have classes. You would have camps. I would say you would put it someplace in the mountains, John. You know? Someplace in the mountains, you get people to sign waivers to understand that this is how you build basically an army.
So you're wanting to create a progressive army.
Basically, yeah. I want to see a progressive army because the fact is, and this is something that a lot of optimists and a lot of bright-eyed people who come from the suburbs, I'm not knocking it, but I'm just telling you, this is what's happening. You think you can reach them with the ideas, but you need the strategy and you need the tactics of what's happening right now regarding to combat the messaging system, because the messaging is so complex now for the Republicans. They've got you. Whether people want to admit it, they've got this country. They've got this country on the messaging. They know how to work the buttons. And so what you need, John, is you need a whole camp where you take someone under the wing, a young person. But it's not like you kidnap them and all that, John.
I was trying to wonder, it sounded like conscription.
You tell them straight out. You say, and here's what you do. You lead them. Of course, you lead them with some rewards, and if they complete this, like a scholarship or something. But I mean, it's a grueling camp. Because I remember when I went to West Point, and see, this is the thing that people don't understand. When you go to a place like West Point and you visit, or you go to a military place, and you experience what they do for a daily regiment. It sticks with you. You may not do it, but you see, it sticks with you.
Yeah.
And the problem is this is what I think's happened, John, to the whole progressive movement in general. We see things in terms of a perception of what work is, and they don't understand the tools that they're thinking of in the progressive. That's like 30 or 40 years dated. You need to bring the most advanced, sharp strategist in. And I'm sorry, this is what it's going to have to be like. It's going to have to be like when someone goes to war college, and you're going to have these classes, you know, where you would hire someone from who was a Republican or a former Republican, and you practice in debate skills.
Well, this is how the Republicans have done it.
Yeah, I mean, but this would be like a whole nother level, John, because you're talking about not just the body. You're talking about the mind, and if you want to take it there, we'll take it to the spirit as well. But basically, what it would do is it would motivate people because you look at some of what's happening right now regarding politics and organizing. It's a lot of phone calls, a lot of internet, a lot of mailing lists, a lot of standing outside protests.
It's a lot of virtual nothing. Unfortunately.
Yeah, it's a lot of virtual nothing. Right, John. And the point is this. The point is when you take these people and you show them no mercy, you've trained basically political animals, if you want to call them that. You've trained more progressive animals and progressive weapons for the fight of the good. That's the point. And well, that's the problem. I would like to see, like, a camp like that. That's one of my ideas that I think something like that needs to come to fruition. I don't know who would bankroll that or whatever, but, you know, there's so many things you could do with a summer camp, John. So many things.
Well, I'm just sitting there thinking, you know, if someone like Limbaugh or Beck were actually listening to this program, boy, would we be giving them some bloody fodder to go nuts on. See, those progressives, they're trying to start a leftist army. They want to arm.
Well, you know, here's the sad thing. We should have done this in 1980. As soon as Reagan was elected, we should have said, okay, that's it. And that was the last one. Everybody up to the mountains.
Yeah. You kind of spun me out, like, this idea of a progressive army, like, I kind of find there's a bit of a conflict in the idea there. But I, you know,
they're pushing us into that corner, John. And the problem is a lot of people don't understand, they don't understand the world of messaging. And that's when we need to start deciphering code. And we need to start having those training sessions in camps where people actually debate. Do simulation debates with some of these shock pundits.
Well, see, I've got a slightly different take on the problem, David. Though, less problem with the way in which progressives go and debate things. I think part of the problem that we have with some of the population is that they're so butt fuck stupid that. No, man. I mean this serious as a heart attack.
Yeah,
They're so willfully buttfuck ignorant that you cannot have an actual debate with them. You cannot actually go to things that are factual or show anything that's provable because they'll just look at you and go, no, you're wrong because, you know, Jeebus did it or Glenn Beck said it's all just a conspiracy. And, you know, because they don't choose, they choose not to find out anything new or anything outside of what they accept. And so I think education is a real problem because you can make the best argument, but if the person you're talking to is a fucking idiot, your chances of winning are pretty slim. You get up against someone that has half a brain and will interact with you, you can educate them. But there are certain people that, like, you know, we got to get them past, you know, kindergarten.
Well, you know, just to put an epilogue on my whole idea, it's not guaranteed to work. You see, it's not guaranteed to work. Yeah, the intelligence factor is going to be a problem. And again, it's something where you know, throughout history, you're not going to reach everybody. That's the nature of the beast. You are not going to reach everybody. But I guess my main point, John, is the fact that there needs to be an increase in discipline, an increase in organization. And this is and I'm sad to say, but this is where we're at right now because we need those types of people out there. When you train those types of of motivators. In the progressive field, it's going to make a difference. Now, like I said, you're not going to have a country that is going to be entirely progressive. We've talked about this, John, before, and people have to understand this. Blind-eyed optimists have to understand this. You're going to have pockets of progressivism because the problem is the system is so corrupt. But when you have those pockets of progressivism all across the states, that ensures you still have that built-up resistance, but you need to strengthen them. That's what I'm talking about.
I've gotten a couple of responses about your army.
Army is such a loaded word, but I mean, that's the marketing. That's what you would do.
Yeah,
because a lot of people get geared up about it. You're not going to go to like a progressive street teamer. camp. You're not going to do that.
Well, you know, there's a certain amount of this without calling it an army that the right wing in various factions have done very well with. The idea of staying on message. And I guess we do end up in a problem where, because on our so-called side, we're ready to debate things. In other words, okay, you disagree with me, but let's talk about it, because I think I can bring you to my point of view, because I have the facts on my side.
Here's the thing, though, John. I'm not after those people, and that's the problem. With progressives who spend time on that, you're going to lose 10 out of the 10, probably 10 out of 10 times. Maybe you're lucky in the 9 because that 1 out of 10 because the person just wants you to go away. How do you know? So how do you really know? You don't. That's the point. The point is to reach people who are open. And the open people are all over the place, and they're scattered. And the fact that we live in the 21st century, we can take the tools that are necessary to bring more awareness to that with a network like this and with other tools at our disposal. But the thing is, John, is it's just one part of the equation. I mean, the other thing is that what the Democrats should be doing is they should be countering this stupid bus protest. They should this stupid bus campaign that Palin is doing all around the United States to get media attention. You know what would really work, John? I'll tell you what would really work. You get a giant Mack truck, right? You get a giant Mack truck, and you wall to wall with red, white, and blue, and you put Restore America on the side. Then, inside that truck, you bring people like Willie Nelson, Bruce Springsteen, Jack Black, and on the side of it, you say Restore America, and you go, or Rebuild America. And you go state to state, and you talk about the importance of rebuilding infrastructure, rebuilding communities, why education is important.
Yeah.
And a lot of people would come out to see something like that, mainly probably because someone like Bruce Springsteen, Willie Nelson, but also because of the message and the fact that it doesn't look fake. So you're running a non-campaign campaign counter.
Well, you know... Organizing that would be interesting, because I think you couldn't actually have it being done by, say, the administration, but the party might be able to do it. But you want to do something like that, you want to almost not have any party involvement with it. I think like the climate issue and whatnot, things like you're talking about, infrastructure.
Right.
You know, all that. These are things that we actually need to turn back into being nonpartisan issues again. Because there was a time where, you know, before we knew anything about, carbon impacts and global warming in the general public, you had right wing, you had what would have been then conservative people that were big into protecting the environment, because, they like to go hunting and they like to go fishing and they like to go camping and they like to do all that stuff. And you need nice places and clean places in which to do these things. But then suddenly, this is something I was talking about yesterday, somewhere along the line, the planet became a partisan issue. And I think it's not the only one where it's like, the progressives just want to build infrastructure because they want to create more, bloody state funded jobs. And it's like, well, no, we want to build that road. We want to build that road so that people can get to your businesses that are members of the Chamber of Commerce that you're a part of, that these things were for the common good. And somehow we've divided things like road projects into an us and them and other similar things. So, like, again, I keep coming back to the fact that, like, I mean, you're talking about message and creating in creating an army, I think brings some rough connotations. And like I said, I've
you can I understand the criticism, but again, you can reword it any way you want. That's not important. The important thing is you have a program like that in place. That's something that's needed.
Because like one comment I'm getting here from Susan, saying what you're talking about is nothing less than the breaking down of all of the self and recreation of an authoritarian. Pardon me, bad tongue today. Progressive Republicans. And I kind of with the way that you brought it up.
I
would go along the same lines. I do understand what you're talking about, but like once we go lockstep, we're no longer progressive.
Well, see, here's the thing. I'm not saying going lockstep to counter what Susan is saying. What I'm saying is people are going to have to be committed to this. And if they want to be participate and be a part of this program, like I said, you don't just say to somebody and you say, come with me, you're going to the mountains. And you don't just say after you train people to be more progressive and to be more aware and be more alert in a discipline camp. No, these people are naturally, they come to it and they volunteer because they want to experience it. That's the point. And see, this is the problem. This is the problem that other people don't understand. This is regardless whether you agree with it or not. I mean, look at Jesus Camp, for God's sakes. You need a resistance field. I'm sorry. John, this is the problem. People don't get this. This happens in corporations. What do you think of war colleges? You need a resistance. You need to build a resistance.
Right, right.
And if you want to call it authoritarian, you can, but it's not true. Because the point is that once you have that kind of antagonizing force against you across the country, and the messaging is constantly attacking you, and nobody has the discipline to counter that.
Well, I think we lack spine in a way when it comes to these things, and I think we actually have the spine to take the bullshit attacks and try and ignore them, but the problem is that view, unless you counter it, becomes the prevailing view. So if someone's talking shit about you, we gotta step up our game in shutting them down and correcting whatever is false or wrong or incorrect or unfair or what have you.
You know, John, the first time I called in, it wasn't about music or anything. It wasn't about building a progressive camp. I said the direction we were going in this country and the continuing direction we were going around the world, we were going to have to start getting into seriously into the mindset of eco-villages because of what we were doing to our environment. And if you look around, you're seeing the breakdown of city by city by city. And the more environmental disasters you have, again, John, this is something where people, a lot of people can laugh at it or poke fun at it, but it's a precaution.
Well, I mean, there's some serious class warfare that goes on. I mean, like you talk about the death of cities, and we have a lot of that's going on here, and I look at it as a form of class warfare. Just this is a real microcosm, but this is important to me. Over the last 20 years, we lost most of our live playing venues to poker machine rooms. Now, what venues are left are being picked up by people who are closing down the stages and opening up wine bars. So it's just like, in the middle of the city, we're now going to create a place that's really expensive, get rid of the riffraff, because we don't like those kind of people. Hold on a second, man. I got someone ringing the other line. Let me see if I can put them on hold.
All right.
Bear with me a sec. Lost him. You still there?
Sorry, person who just called John.
We'll wrap this up.
It was not my fault.
And you can ring back in. But, like, I look at, you know, and every time this happens, like, we're getting down to the point where there's almost no place to play. And we're talking about, this is local culture, right? So, bit by bit, people with a lot of money are buying the places where those with not so much money used to congregate. And I think I lost David. I'm going to try and get him back again here. Just a sec. And wonder why that happened. Let's see if we get him back.
Yes.
Did I get you back?
Yes, you did.
Yeah. But what I was saying is one by one, I see people with lots of money coming and buying legendary places and then basically wiping them off the map.
Well, you know, John, the thing about the a lot of people who I would consider centrists and modern suburbians and modern metropolitan dwellers is they don't understand. I don't think they understand because they've been living so long in a system like this that there's no way we're going to be able to keep the upkeep on these cities. We've built them in such a way that there is no goddamn way. Unless we have slave labor.
Well, you know,
then we can keep the upkeep on all these damn cities.
Well, it's like what, you know, the life cycle of most cities is usually fairly similar, you know. It's usually some sort of agricultural or commercial center that builds up over time. And then once it gets to a certain size, the real estate becomes too expensive for the locals that used to actually live there on the street level to live there anymore, and you end up having the low wage workers living way outside the city, while the high wage workers get to live in the city in all their overpriced, you know, apartments and condos and all this other thing, and once you push the local population out that created this city, suddenly there's no one sweeping the sidewalk out front the store. You know, there's not all that local business goes away, and like you said, suddenly the people that actually made the city live have all been pushed out.
Right. And, you know, the other thing that is tied to all of this is the reason why we're having such a problem in this country is that, I'm sorry to say this, John, but a lot of citizens, I think they need to understand this really, really, really to be able to understand this. Let's say, let's pretend that the politicians, they somehow find a way to give us everything we've ever dreamed for. Let's just pretend that, people. Let's make that happen right now. What do you think would happen afterwards? Do you honestly think, listen, people, do you honestly think that the American citizens would be in the, would be immediately, got your back, we're going to fight for you as much as we can for the Democrats? Do you really think that? No, that's not what happened. They would sit down and they would say, I got what I wanted. See you later. Fuck you. And here's the point, John. I brought this up before, and I'm going to say it again because it's a resident quote. The politicians are more cynical of us than we are of them. So you have to ask yourself this. Who is the intelligent one in this situation?
Well, you know, who's winning?
Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, it's a good strategy because the politicians understand. Listen, I don't care if I piss some people off. If I was a politician, regarding what I see in this country right now, regarding how I see people respond to our social situation right now, I wouldn't give you everything. I'd be like, are you kidding me? I don't trust you. You don't have my back, and you don't know me. Why should I do that? Let me ask you something. The progressives out there listening, do you honestly think that a stranger is going to trust you? Huh? Do you? That ain't going to happen. And that's where we're at. So this is the point I want everybody to understand. Look in the mirror. Because what you see as a reflection in D.C. is exactly a component of who we are as a society. And that goes worldwide. So that should make you ponder a moment.
That's what we always used to say when, you know, George Bush was in office. You know?
Right, right.
America finally elected someone like themselves.
Well, I mean, there's serious truth to that. But there's also serious truth to the fact that American citizens will complain about greatly what they want, and once they get what they want, they're going to leave you and give you the finger.
It's pretty much It's pretty much all they've been doing.
I mean, I'm with you, John, on the fact that we need to have mandatory voting. This is goddamn ridiculous.
Yeah, I just don't understand how. Well, I understand why the argument hasn't been made over there, because there would be a whole bunch of libertarian types sitting there going, "Well, you're taking my freedom away to not participate," and with mandatory voting as well. You know, you remove so much of the game playing that can be done.
What is your take on Obama coming out and saying, "I would be happy with being a one-term president once again," right before
the
national election?
I mean, I can understand making the comment, like, you know, I haven't actually read the article, you know, and being like, you know, the crap that I've taken from John Boehner and the rest of these fuckers, you know. Whoops, I'm not supposed to be saying that at the moment. I hear that we're being played on some terrestrial station.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Whoops.
Please censor me.
Yeah. I don't have a delay.
Well,
so we just have to be on our best behavior.
Blame it on the host. FCC bill goes to John, not to me.
Well, I'm kind of hoping that whoever's rebroadcasting us, because they do it in delay, I really hope that they are aware of how this network is operated and that they're going and editing their own stuff before they broadcast it. Because, I don't want to be paying those fines. It'd just be insane. But like,
I think the relief where we can just breathe a sigh of relief. I think it's really late at night. So
this is true. This is true.
It's on
a really low power station that falls into other guidelines. You know, it's like too small to worry about, kind of thing. But I can understand Obama, you know, making. And again, this is if we lived in a reasonable world, because we don't live in a reasonable world. That's the thing that I constantly have to remind myself. You know, things happen. I go, that just isn't right. Oh yeah, I don't live in a right society, so I should expect for it to be crap. And you know, I could see him going, you know, one term is enough. Because I mean, regardless of how much I'm disappointed or disagree or whatever, here's the youngest guy we've ever had in the office, and you see how in just like two something years, how much he's aged, how much more gray hair there is, you know. Regardless of who, what party you're in, whatever, that job is a mother. As far as what it's going to take out of you. But, you know, I really just think he's just falling short constantly. And then where he does do the right thing, he either doesn't take it far enough or he doesn't trump it enough. You know, say, you know, like the auto bailout. There's one, like, why they haven't, you know, I said it yesterday. I disagreed with the bailout when he did it. But now, 2 years later, they've paid all the money back. We've made interest on it. All those other businesses, the parts manufacturers and all that, didn't end up being put out of business. And Obama took the opportunity to say, okay, for the bailout money, you now have to have a fully electric vehicle on the road by this such and such a year. You need to have a viable hybrid by such and such a year. You need to get your fuel efficiency up to a certain standard. And guess what? They've done it all. And, you know, the Volt's about to hit the market, and it's supposed to be now the most sought-after alternative vehicle, fuel vehicle, going to be on the market. And so there's a win. One that I didn't even agree with. Why isn't this guy or his administration up there saying, but see, when you let us do what we want to do without fucking with it, without messing with it, we've gotten some really good results. See what happens when you actually let us do what we want to do. Because I do think a lot of what he does isn't necessarily what he wants to do, but he just allows himself to be played.
But you see, the problem that a lot of people, I think it's the optimism shining through again, and this is where I don't really see President Obama and what he represents as a problem. What I see as a problem is the barriers against him. Let's pretend for a second, John. Again, let's pretend that he did everything we wanted to do. How much do you think he would have got passed, and how much of a resistance do you think he would have got from the so-called centrists and the independents? And the independents in the polls, they would say he wasn't agreeable. They would say he was going too far left.
Oh, I know.
This is the problem we have in the society.
I know. That, and, you know, we something that's like centrist is considered extreme left, you know, and if you're anything left of bloody Mussolini, you're a communist. I mean, like,
well,
the...
The thing about the term centrist, and I've brought this up before, it's really convenient for someone who isn't going to jump off the fence. Well, that's great. You have that position. I wish I could have that luxury, but we don't. You know, it's like someone telling you, John, you know what? I'm done with politics, and I'm done with all of this. Really, 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 you're done with politics. Well, that's a shame because politics isn't done with you.
Yeah.
Not at the slightest.
Everything we do is political.
Right. Everything we do is political. Correct. And. You know, that's the problem talking with a lot of people who are from the left and progressives and like this. They say, well, why didn't Obama do this and why didn't he do that and why didn't he do this? And see, this is my position. And I think if you look at where we're at as a country, you'll start to nod your head, maybe disappointingly. Look at the infrastructure. Look at the media. Look at the media concentration of all of the networks and all the corporations that invested properly, I might add, that the progressives did it. Now we're trying to play catch-up with something that is just a disaster. I caught myself on using language.
Yeah, well done. You talk about the media. Have you read Have you read the Olbermann piece at Rolling Stone?
I've read a bit of it. It's really interesting, isn't it?
Well, because I mean he talks to the media model, and maybe we'll have to save this for, we'll come back to this later in the week. But
yeah.
I think he talks about the current thing. Yeah. No one knows who the hell Current is now, but no one knew who MSNBC was really before Olbermann on a grand scale. So this could just be repeating history. But he talked about where the news organization also has, you know, other interests that immediately impacts the way things are going to be reported. And that he's hoping to be like, well, this is going to be where this is a news organization. And, well, it's a news organization. And, well, it's a news organization.
Mm-hmm.
And remove the conflicts. And I thought it was a really interesting way that he dealt with the idea of censorship and self-censorship in the modern media model. But I think that's something we should talk about later in the week, because I think I should open it up for some other calls and take a top of the hour break.
I just wanted to say what we need to do is we need to understand where we're at as a society, and that's why we don't. And if you really think about it, there's a reason why we don't have everything to our heart's desire, and it goes back to that apathy. And it goes back to parts of the human nature that we don't want to talk about as progressives and liberals. I'm sorry to say that, but that's the truth.
You're probably right.
And but before I go, one last thing. Mm-hmm. This is a code that I recently learned, and I think it bears repeating. A jail inmate was asked on the Louis Theroux documentary. What are these rules that you call? Why do these rules apply to you? And he says, everything in jail, it seems backwards. And he just said one simple thing, John. He said, "Gabos, the game ain't built on sympathy." And that's pretty much the end of it, people.
Yeah,
the game
yeah.
ain't built on sympathy.
You got that. No,
all right, John.
All right, man. You take care of yourself, and we'll speak to you later in the week.
All right. Gabos, John.
All right. Take care, man.
Later.
And that's our buddy David Main. And we're going to take top of the hour break. And even though I haven't gotten it yet, might have it before the week's out. One of the best things that David's turned me on to in the last year is a band called Black Country Communion. And this is Glenn Hughes and Jason Bonham and Joe Bonamassa. And it's just like this great super group. And the first album they did, they recorded, mixed, mastered, and had all done in 14 days. And that was so well received, they thought they'd go back and do a real record. And that real record was released yesterday. Don't have that yet, but I will play one off of the first Black Country Communion album. This is One Last Soul. You're listening to Head On with Bob Kincaid. I'm John Fox. We'll be back after this.
You're the one.
know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
82. Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Well, if you've been listening all day, well, all evening, you'll know that this ain't Bob. It's John. John Fox down in Australia. Filling in for the man while he's at Netroots Nation. Like I said, I'm really hoping to get a call from the boy sometime this week, but he must be just really swamped into it. I know there's been some panel discussions for The Last Mountain, which came out last week. I can't wait to see it. And, you know, so we'll hear from him at some stage, and always good to talk to David like we did before. He and I go off on mad tangents. I'm never sure about how much of the audience he and I hold on to, but I have a good time, so. And working on having that new Black Country Communion for you to hear some of that later on in the week. But in somewhat somewhat breaking news, at least it's new to the Raw story, federal judge in San Francisco on Tuesday upheld retired Judge Vaughn R. Walker's ruling on California's Proposition 8 after supporters of the measure accused Walker of being prejudiced in the case. He was gay. So they said he should, you know, step down from the case. Well, thankfully it's been upheld. Finally, a little bit of reason over there. How something like Proposition 8 ever passed in a state like California is just insane anyway. But it says, U.S. District Court Judge James Ware upheld Walker's ruling that Proposition 8 violated the Constitution's Equal Protection Clause, noting there was no evidence that Walker should have recused himself from the Proposition 8 trial because he was in a same-sex relationship. So, like... It would set up a really, really, really weird precedent. What? You have a case with a straight person, so what? We have to find an entirely gay, bisexual, and transgender jury? Or judges? I don't know. Anyway, we got about an hour left in the program if you want to get in on things. And I know I had a couple of people try and ring in while I was on the phone with David. And I can't really juggle multiple lines over here too easily. So ring back in, 304-574-7811, 304-574-7811. 11. You know, think about David when he rang up and talking about, you know, the progressive army, right? And I got a whole bunch of stuff in my mailbox, everybody going, that sounds like the Nazis, and all kinds of other things. And rightfully so, if you take it on face value. Now, I understand, I think I understand where Dave's coming from, because I guess the thing is, like, well, if we have all the facts on our side, you know, for the most part, on most issues, and we're not getting through, and we're not seeming to be winning in any way, that our messaging is the problem. And I can understand making that conclusion, but I go back to what I said to David, you know, and he's, you know, he also agreed that there's always going to be a certain percentage of the population that you'll never get them on your side. But I really have to wonder if there's really anything that can be done. And I don't mean to sound totally pessimistic. But, I mean, if you just look at everything that the world, you know, and that there is a whole world out there. It's not just the United States. But, you know, in the last 10 or so years, you know, as I've referred to as the lost decade, And you know, lost decade. Well, as far as I see it, from the year 2000 forward, nothing really positive has happened in this world. We've made no great strides. All we've done is burn up a little bit more of the place, bomb a whole lot more of the place. And if this reality of giveaways to banks and opening up of, you know, new offshore drilling after what happened in the Gulf last year, how do we get this ship to change course? And I really don't have an answer for you. And, you know, we've had 10 years or so of absolutely nothing. Nothing but decay. Last time I was in the United States was in 1998. Bill Clinton was still in office. And this is like before I became politicized. But, you know, I'm in Germany and there's Bill out there being a good figurehead for the United States internationally. The U.S. economy was going pretty well. You know, things seem to be kind of ticking along okay. Cold War was coming to an end, so like that whole huge fear that we all, that I grew up with, you know, at least I was young enough where they stopped having us, you know, hide under the desk, which was completely useless. But, you know, there was always this, you know, we no longer had this big fear of of, you know, the Russians bombing us. And then George Bush came along. And the mood of everything changed. Now, I think for a certain part of the population that clued into what was going on early, seeing that one state basically gave the presidency away may have set the decade off on a bad foot. But then 2001, the official beginning of the lost decade. And ever since September of 2001, the United States has just been in this incredible, I don't know, internal fight where it's all become so polarized, where reality doesn't count for shit, doesn't count for anything. Just who's got the bigger megaphone, who's saying the most outrageous thing. And most of our political discourse ends up being about people that aren't even running for an office. And you know who I'm talking about. More coverage than the debt ceiling, or more coverage than any of that. A half-term governor sucks up all the media energy. All she has to do, she's so vacuous, she just absorbs all the energy around her. Now, David makes a comment in here, you know, about taking a long view on things. And I think that's what he's talking about this disciplined camp concept. And I... But he talks about, you know, families are being ripped apart by the economic conditions. And our very leaders are the people that are keeping them underwater. It's pretty ugly. As you said, it's not fair and it's not clean. I've gone way past believing that Americans will take to the street. Gave up on that a long time ago. And so that's again why I say, you know, like, what could possibly turn this around, or even not just turn it around, just suddenly have the political system engage with its populace again? But as long as we have so much money, Citizens United, can't mention it enough. Like Sanders said, you know, the voting is kind of a joke now. Because opinion is able to be bought without any trace to where it comes from. You know, it's just a free-for-all. And you know, what I mentioned yesterday, that, you know, on the Gingrich, on the Newt.org site, them talking about the being at the premiere of their new DVD produced by Gingrich Productions and Citizens United. And it seems that we can only talk about conflict of interest or when it comes to anything where the workers have an interest. But when it comes to business, money, and influence, there's no conflict. What conflict? There's no conflict. What conflict? I don't have a conflict of interest. That's why, you know, Newt moves some money from his nonprofit into his profit-making businesses. But see, that's not a conflict to them. It's that old, it's okay if you're a Republican routine. And Kath from Canada, please ring in and rant. 304-574-7811. 304-574-7811. We got about 40 minutes left in the program. And as normal tomorrow, we will be doing a prayer meeting edition. I got a few things that I've been avoiding touching on today that would have been fun, but I'm going to save them for tomorrow. And, you know, while Bob's away, just because Bob's away doesn't mean that the bills are not still due. So, please don't forget, if you've got something to spare, please, 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 please hit that contribute button. The snail mail address is also there, at the website, headonradionetwork.com. If you, click on the contact or contribute, will be taken to where our snail mail address is, where you can, if you don't like the PayPal thing, we're working on getting Google Checkout going, which we should get happening. But I'm going to take a little musical break here because, and this one, you know, even though it's actually a lot more about rock and roll than life, but, you know, Sandra was saying she was liking some of the different music that I've been playing. And one of my favorites, you know, for how much Southern rock is played on this network, you know, with Bob and the Drive-By Truckers. One of my favorite bands seems to, for some reason, I don't know, too alternative or something, doesn't quite fall into that whole thing, but I love them. The Black Crowes, as you all know. So, light up the phone lines, and we're going to take a little musical break. Here's one of my favorite tunes off of Three Snakes and a Charm. This is the Black Crowes with Under a Mountain.
Written from
will actually bring that to a close a little short because we got a caller on the line. Let's go to the phones. How you going? Welcome to the program. Who we got?
Hey, John. It's Gene.
Hey, Gene. How you going, buddy?
Oh, not too bad. Boy, that was some admission that guy made on that video, that union business, because that's a... That's a double-edged sword right there.
I think the same thing. I thought that was really interesting trying to portray it as a business.
Yeah, because, I mean, shoot, I mean, if they can flick crap on workers' unions, I don't see why we can't flick crap on their associations. After all, if they're not representing most people, then, of course, their interests aren't going to be aligned with yours, so, or generally speaking. So, I don't know. I haven't had, just wanted to call in a little bit and see how you were doing. You sound great.
Oh, thanks, man. You make the comment, you know, like where they do that framing of you know, the unions as a business. You know, they're doing, the unions are trying to profit, are profiting off of you. As opposed to Walmart's not?
It's pretty pathetic. I saw there's another one out there from Staples where they'll have the same team. I didn't run it all the way through, but I'll send that one along. It's not, the audio isn't quite as good, but it's more of that kind of stuff. I just wanted to pop in. I'm hanging around. I'm still surfing. I'm kind of juggling my finances now like a right-handed juggler who's had his good arm amputated off. but I'm surviving.
So married life so far is treating you okay?
Well, when it gets started, yeah. Actually, she's over in the UK right now wrapping up her stuff, and then she'll be home in a couple of months. I mean, God, I miss her. But we're doing okay. Thanks for surviving. We've got a little bit of a, I noticed that on a personal level that our apartment here, I heard that, apparently they're not going to schedule any kind of upgrade to it for the next 5 years, which is kind of odd because the other property that's owned by the same company, and of course we've got the public-private partnership crap going on here, too. The one that's not near public transit, is there's a bias toward they get more money. So I figure what they're kind of trying to do is kind of discouraging people that want to live here from being here. And those of us that are still here, they'd like us to transfer. I just figure eventually when there aren't any takers of this place get so bad, they'll say, well, we have to condemn it and tear it down and then sell the property, because it's like, it's only a couple of blocks from public, you know, from the MAX station, so it's... But if they
built a bigger complex on the property, boy, they could cash in, couldn't they?
Especially if it was full market rates and not for poor people. which can't, you know, they can't do that. Yeah, but, you know, that's kind of how I feel, but that's just me. Anyway, I'll let you go, because I'm sure you got more callers there.
Well, yeah, and I'm just about to get back to one of the other links that you sent me was the connected Walmart piece about them actually having some judgment come down against them today for trying to rip off workers' break time, I guess it is.
Well, it was funny because I've got to track this down because I'm not quite sure which Portland they're talking about, but a couple of Pennsylvania senators have asked the EPA to delay implementing some coal regulations at this power plant in Portland somewhere. It might be Portland, Maine. I'm not sure. But apparently it's like it's an out-of-state corporation. And people are asking, why are they lobbying for this when shouldn't they be lobbying for folks in Pennsylvania for their environmental laws? If Spike calls in, or maybe he would know more about it. I'm not sure, but anyway, I will catch you later.
Yeah, and if you have anything on that, send it my way. I don't know anything about it. I'd like to get up to speed.
Okay, I'll send that to you and as much else as I can when I get a chance to.
All right, buddy, you take care of yourself.
You too. Take it easy. Bye-bye.
All right, man. Bye-bye. And that's, of course, Gene, the original news ninja. And this is one of the reasons why I took the song break before was because I was just from closing down before I just had to go hunting back up some of the stories that I had ready to go. And so, you know, earlier I played you a bit from that Walmart training video where they're like, so they're going, the unions are just a business trying to siphon money off you workers. And you don't need unions no more because we already passed worker protection laws. Don't need that no more. Now, if their communication is so good and their organization is so great, wonderful, fair, and angelic as they portray in the beginning of that video, and either Gawker or the Raw Story, you have to watch the whole thing because it is one of those just absolute cringeworthy things that you know how horrible it would be that if that was a job that you had to take. And we've had to sit through them. I've sat through them. You know, those indoctrination videos of sitting there going, okay, now that we've hired you and we're paying you a pittance per hour, it is time for you to put your soul in a box every day before you come here. And this is how we do it. But via Reuters, Walmart Stores Incorporated has lost its appeal of most of a $187.6 million verdict for Pennsylvania hourly workers who accused the world's largest retailer of denying the meal and rest breaks. See, look, if they could just make robots that stocked shelves and took the money, they wouldn't hire anyone. A three-judge panel of the Superior Court of Pennsylvania on Friday said there was sufficient evidence for Philadelphia jurors in 2006 to conclude that Walmart's practices violated state wage and hour laws. It also said Walmart's own internal review uncovered violations regarding off-the-clock work. The case was brought on behalf of about 187,000 current and former Walmart workers in Pennsylvania from 1998 to 2006. They contend that the Bentonville, Arkansas-based companies engaged in improper practices to enhance productivity, boost profits, and cut costs. The record reflects testimony and documentary evidence suggesting that because of pressure from the home office to reduce labor costs and the availability of significant bonuses for managers based on store profitability, Walmart's scheduling program created chronic understaffing leading to widespread rest break violations, the appealed court said. It nonetheless ordered the trial court to recalculate a $45.6 million award of legal fees, saying that the court erred by double counting some factors. We're committed to paying our associates for every hour they work and to providing them with meals and rest breaks, Walmart spokesman Greg Rossiter said. That's our policy we take very seriously. In this case, we believe the trial court's decision was wrong in a number of respects and look forward to additional review in the courts. So basically what happens is they understaff the place, and then they got long lines of people buying cheap stuff. And so they tell this person who's been on their feet for 5 hours, has needed to pee for an hour, no, you can't go on break. So someone scheduled a 15-minute break, you know, to go have a wee for bloody sakes. Are programmed in. So if you're not able to take that break, they need to pay you for the time. See, these are the little things that unions look out for. I'm not getting paid for my breaks. We were busy. I didn't take breaks this weekend, but they didn't pay me for it. This is the other side of that video. It's incredible. And, you know, and the doublespeak. We're committed to paying for every hour they work. Yeah, every hour they work, but we're not paying them for the breaks that we Stull. You know, and this is after, you know, wages have stayed stagnant virtually for decades. It's shameless. The case was brought by Michelle Braun and Dolores Hummel, who had respectively worked in Walmart's and Sam's Club stores in eastern Pennsylvania and drew on evidence from roughly 46 million shifts, court records show. Judith Spanier, one of the plaintiff's lawyers, said in a statement that Walmart wanted to walk away from its own business records, saying they were so inaccurate that they could not be used as proof. Like other large retailers, Walmart is regularly sued by employees who claim unfair treatment. It's probably because there's a lot of unfair treatment out there. Like other, the U.S. Supreme Court is expected this month to rule on whether a gender bias lawsuit against Walmart may continue to proceed as a class action on behalf of a group believed to exceed 1.5 million current and former female workers. Walmart shares closed down 10 cents at $52.62. So they also have a gender bias case against them. Something else unions might get involved with. It's hilarious. It's just so unbelievably brazen. So incredibly brazen. Which is... And this is something, you know, that appears to me to have happened in my lifetime. Because, you know, I've worked for a couple of, you know, big companies, you know, in my day in retail jobs and things like that. I worked for Circle K. You know, so did the convenience store thing, and they all have this strange indoctrination thing where they always kind of want to portray that you're entering some sort of, you know, cult-like family. And you're told exactly how your family members behave, and that we're all the same. And this is pretty much standard fare, you know, especially in retail. You know, a place like Walmart, you know. I've worked for companies that didn't do this kind of thing. Crazy Eddie's was one of them. Yeah, I know about all the insider trading and all that other stuff, but there are other ways to do it. But even when it's not a big union-busting thing like that, this idea that because you're being paid $8 an hour to take crap from people who wouldn't know the value of what it is to make anything, so buying all that cheap Chinese crap is just fine for them. Have you all got over there yet in your grocery stores and whatnot self-serve checkouts yet? Has that happened yet? Because it's happening here, right? And just thinking about, you know, most, you know, grocery stores are one of the great employers of teenagers. And this, my first real job was at a grocery store. And there was a union when it was the one and only job where there was mandatory union membership that I ever experienced. And, you know, $1.60 or something came out of my pay every week. But it was made really clear, though, that because of that due that I paid, once I was working for the company for, you know, whatever it was, 60 days, I went off the trainee wage to entry full wage. And then every year, I got a little something more. Lottie's telling me that they have the self-serve checkouts at Home Depots. They've hit grocery stores here. Woolworths uses them. And I couldn't believe this. A few months ago, I was in there. And if they only have one express lane open and I've got just like a jug of milk, I will wait on the express line for an actual human to check me out, take my money, hand me my change, and my receipt. Because my money being spent in that store is supposed to be paying for local employment. So at this Woolworths, right in the middle of the whole front, there's, you know, like eight of these self-serve checkouts, which they have someone hanging out there, you know, in case you have problems with it. And one time when a manager tried to pull me out of the express lane to introduce me to the self-serve checkout, I said, no, I'm sorry, I will stay here. I don't want to undermine local jobs. And this woman, again, like where I said, you know, there's like an indoctrination with a lot of these big outfits, you know, it's like, you know, okay, we're paying you $8 an hour, leave your soul at the door. And this woman said, no, these self-serve checkouts, she said this to me with a straight face and looked me in the eye. She said, these self-serve checkouts create jobs. Someone has to oversee them. And I go, oh, yeah, okay, right. So the six actual manned or womaned checkouts that they replaced weren't jobs before? And they know me well enough that they don't even bother asking me anymore. And, you know, I've made the comment to the cashier, you know. Anyone who goes over there is trying to do you out of a job. And they usually look at me and smile. But, you know, it's part of this opposite world kind of reality. The six registers that we've replaced with machines that you do yourself, and the, you know, my other response to him is, okay, if I use that, what's the discount? You're not paying, so you're going to pay me to process the money for you? Come on, you know, don't even get me started on the way that you screw farmers. Because they're like the Walmart of grocery here. And like Lottie says in the chat room, I figure you want my business, you better have a live person there. And I completely agree. The fact that you can't pay someone an hourly wage to take my money, I find the most unbelievable insult. And because I ride a bicycle and I have a backpack, of course I must be stealing something every time I'm in there. But that's a whole nother subjecto. But, you know, and I do enjoy making a bit of a public point about these things. Because I do see, you know, you'll have as many people that look at me going, ah, some stupid wacko hippie ranting about something. Same amount of people, you can see them going, oh yeah, my kid might want this cashier's job in 2 years. Wait a minute. Maybe I shouldn't be using the self-serve thing. Maybe it is actually worth it for me to stand in line and wait, yeah, queue up. So you can have a nice little conversation with the human cashier. And you know that something of what you spent actually went to someone. Not just the main office. Because that's what they, if they could have robots, and I mean, really, that would be the thing. If you'd self-serve everything in every shop and walk out and on the honor system, pay for everything, that's like modern, that's like the Chamber of Commerce's wet dream. The magic machine that just takes money. It's nuts. Before we get out of here, we've got a few more minutes. And because I'm just not in the filibobstering mood today. Before the show started, I ran some music to warm up the stream while people were coming to the chat room. And I think it was you, David, that made some sort of comment about, you know, once we wrecked the place so much that we're living in little domes. Well, was that in reference to the song that I played earlier? If not, oh well, I'm going to play it again. Country Joe McDonald, one of my favorite records, Country Joe Absolute Live, or Incredible Live. It's a fantastic live record. It's Country Joe and acoustic guitar and a live audience, and it's hilarious. It's just an on fire, lots of energy. And I love this tune. It just says so much. I mean, this is from like 1969. It might be 72 at the latest. And kind of just talking about a possible future. And it's a little bit cartoonish and it's a little bit kids' book, but I don't know. I just totally dig it. So, here's a little bit of Country Joe as we finish off the show in a foxed up fashion with a little bit of music. Country Joe McDonald, living in the future in a plastic dome.
I have this sort of a plot for a science fiction book which I haven't written yet, which is that things get so bad and polluted that everyone moves into geodesic domes, and inside the domes is really nice, you know. And this is a little song about how wonderful it's going to be living inside these big domes, you know. Covered the city with plastic domes so the air inside could be clean. And it's really fine in our new home, we have everything we need. There are no planes, no buses or trains, and if you want to go somewhere, just think about where you'd like to be at, and before you know it, you're there. Living in the future in a plastic dome sounds mighty strange, I agree. But now I call it home, sweet home, that's where I long to be, yeah. Living in the future in a plastic dome sounds mighty strange, I agree. But now I call it home, sweet home, that's where I long to be. Now if you're hungry for food or drink, just go to the teller machine. To place your order, you just have to think and look at the video screen. If you're lonesome and you think you would like to have a friendly chat, just talk to the teller machine and the teller machine will talk back. Hey, living in the future in a plastic dome sounds mighty strange, I agree. Now I call it home, sweet home, that's where I long to be. Yeah. Living in the future in a plastic dome sounds mighty strange, I agree. Now I call it home, sweet home, that's where I long to be.
This record would have to be on my Desert Island Discs list. Just politically, everything is just like so spot on. And just as we're getting down to it, like I said, we're going to finish it up like a little bit like a foxed up show. For those of you that used to tune into my show, there was a song that I had to play once every show, because if there's one thing I can send out as a message to the world, it's this. And that would be Michael Ferranti and Stay Human.
Starvation is a creation of the devil. food to the people like a widow, bringing flowers to a grave in the middle of the city. Isolation is a riddle. To be surrounded by a million other people, but feel alone like a tree in the desert, dried up like the skin of a lizard, but full of color like the spots of a leopard. Drum and bass pull me in like a shepherd, scratch my itch like a needle on the record. Put a little man going to Mecca, sky high like an eagle up soaring. I speak low but I'm like a lion roaring, baritone like a Robeson recording. I'm giving thanks for being human every morning, morning, morning. Because the streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. Can I hear it once again? Boom bap. Tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. Can I hear it once again? Boom bap. I tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. Be resistant the negativity, we keep it at a distance. Hope for backup and I'll give you some assistance. Like a lifesaver deep in the ocean. Stay afloat here upon the funky motion. Rock and roll upon the waves of the season. Hold your breath and your underwater breathing. To be rhyming without a real reason is to claim and not to practice a religion. If television is the drug of the nation, satellite is immaculate reception. Beaming in, they can look and they can listen. So you see, don't believe in the system to legalize you or give you your freedom. You want rights, ask them to read them. But every flower got a right to be blooming. Stay human, because the streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. Can I hear it once again? Boom bap. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. But can I hear it once again? Boom bap. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. Because all the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Because all the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Aha. We saw the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Stay human. You see why 2K and 2 is a moment in time we find that we can open up a heart that's locked or been broken by the pain of words not spoken, nor shot by guns or still smoking. Cartwrights out on the Ponderosa, or drive by banging Testarossa. We need to heed the words of Dalai Lama, or at least the words of your mama. Take a mental trip to the Bahamas. Steam your body in a stereo sauna, sauna, comma. Because the streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. But can I hear it once again? Boom bap. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. But can I hear it once again? Boom bap. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. But can I hear it once again? Boom bap. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. But can I hear it once again? Boom bap. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. Because all the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Ha 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 ha. Because all the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Stay human.
I love that song. I'm going to do one more before we get out of here. And this is actually something I meant to do yesterday. While I've been on off air, the rock and roll community here in Australia lost two great brothers, one in the name of Pat Pickett. I'll talk about Pat sometime. But most recently, one of the freaky people that made this world beautiful, a guy by the name of Greg Clark. Great rock and roll engineer, complete tech boffin, looked like the comedian Bill Bailey and was just as funny. And he was Billy Thorpe's tour manager right up until Billy was taken by a heart attack a couple of years ago. Clarky wasn't much older than me, and I tell you, it kind of put a bit of the scare in for me. But I have to play something for Clarky because it's one of these situations. Now, I usually will play a Temple of the Dog tune when we lose someone. But this time I got to play something from Billy Thorpe just because, well, Clarky worked for Thorpey, and this is just a great song. So on the way out of here, we'll come back, wrap things up real quick, and make way for Mr. Rick Smith coming up next. So the cliche, but you got to play it, Billy Thorpe and the Aztecs. Most people I know think I'm crazy.
Most people I know.
peace, Clarky. With that, folks, we're going to wrap it up. Thanks to Susan for blogging today. Thanks to Gene and Texas Betsy and Luke for the stories that they emailed in. So much stuff we didn't even get to tonight. Thanks to Lottie in the chat room for keeping an eye on things. And thanks to Ben Birch at the White Rose Society for everything that he does for us. We'd be screwed without him. And we'd be screwed without if you have something. Get to that contribute button, send what you can. I'll do a check-in and see how we're going and report in tomorrow night. So if you can, please get on it. And with that, as always, Gina, it's all for you.